Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Today on NFL Live, what do Tom Brady's current teammates think about impending free agency? We'll have a live report from Foxborough to take the pulse of the Patriots. Does the latest offer signal a new long-term contract is imminent for Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott? We're live in Frisco, Texas. We'll talk about the potential of a new deal for Dak. And the NFL has now pushed the franchise tag deadline back again. Adam Schefter is with us. He'll explain what that means and what it will mean for some of the game's biggest free agents. Happy to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix, Adam Schefter, Keyshawn Johnson, and former Texas Rangers GM, Rick Smith, back here. When I say Texas,
you said Texas Rangers.
Houston, I'm talking baseball. It's baseball season.
Nothing about
Rick.
Baseball.
Did I get you a new job, perhaps? All right. So we're happy to have you with us as well, back for a second day. But let's start with the franchise tag deadline that's now been pushed back for a second time.
Well, they pushed it back now to Monday at 11:59 a.m. Eastern. And what this means is that there's going to be a vote on a new CBA on Saturday night. And if that CBA passes, then that means each team will have one tag, one franchise tag. If it does not pass, each team will have two tags, a franchise and a transition tag. So they push back the franchise tag deadline till after the NFLPA vote on Saturday night. So we'll get clarity on Saturday night about whether there is or isn't a new CBA. And then on Monday, there'll be a franchise tag deadline when teams can know what to do at 11:59 a.m. Eastern. And then at noon, 1 minute later, so you get a 60-minute water break. Basically, the legal tampering period begins at noon on Monday, and then Wednesday, 4 o'clock, is the start of the league year when trades can be done, when deals can be finalized and signed, and that should make for quite a week next week.
What is
the chances of them pushing it back again?
No, the league year is going to start on Wednesday. I'm told it is firm. They've changed it a bunch of times. They're not going to change it again.
But I think it's good for the club executives because at least there's some clarity at this point. You know, you had that awkward thing yesterday where you had a deadline to franchise guys and then you didn't know what rules you were going to be operating under. And so this at least provides clarity for them.
Again, to the player vote on the CBA, the votes were due in Thursday. Now that's been pushed back to Saturday as well. So at least we're moving in the right direction. Another step in the right direction, I should say, as well, for former Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. A four-month scan Monday, that's yesterday, came back clear, according to our Laura Rutledge. He will train in Nashville and will start throwing, running, rolling out, and doing some dropbacks this week in preparation for his own pro day, not Alabama pro day. His will be April 9th, where he will showcase his talents for NFL teams. Our injury analyst, Stefania Bell, joins us now, and Tua now cleared, this was yesterday, for full activity. So what was the significance of yesterday, and what does that mean going forward?
Wendy, the last time we heard about a test that worked out well for Tua, it was when he had a CAT scan that showed that the fracture in his hip had healed. This was an MRI, which looks at different tissue. They were looking at the health of the cartilage, the health of the rest of the joint, to see whether that joint had healed to the point where he could start loading it more. That's why the different activity. You know, up until this point, his rehab has been somewhat limited, working on glute, quad, hamstring strength, but not overloading the joint. Still in a protective phase until this MRI. This signals that he can now go forward and ramp up his activity as he worked towards getting back to football.
So having said that, Stefania, then what are the realistic expectations for that pro day that I mentioned on April 9th, now just about a month away?
Keep in mind, this is a big injury, and while it's great that he's got this full clearance, expecting him to look like he can step on the field in 4 weeks is a little bit much of an expectation. I think the idea is for him to be able to show scouts that he can throw, maybe do some dropbacks and rollouts, but not anything too aggressive. Over the next few weeks, he'll be ramping up the loading through the joint. That means Alter G, that a treadmill that controls how much weight bearing you're putting through the hip, increasing loading, increasing more aggressive activity. But you still have a hip that's in the process of healing, despite how the imaging looks. The worst thing you could do would be to overload it in the interim and then have a setback, just him being too sore and not being able to perform when he gets to camp. And keep in mind, there is a medical recheck that happens in April when Tua will go back. to see all the team physicians who examined him at the combine for them to get their own assessment of how he's looking. So you don't want to do too much in the interim before you go back and have that medical recheck.
That all makes sense. Stefania, thank you. A setback serves no one, that's for sure. Listen, all of this in anticipation of the draft, April 23rd in Las Vegas, the first round of the draft. So, Adam, you know, there are a lot of questions here, not because of talent, but because of health. So where do you see the ceiling for Tua in this draft?
Well, there's been people that have speculated that Tua could go as high as number two to Washington. I think it's a hard-to-imagine scenario that Washington, ultimately, 1 year after taking Dwayne Haskins, would go ahead and take Tua this year. But look, they've said that they're going to consider that. We'll see how that plays out. You look at the three spot, Detroit. Teams will approach them. You look at the four spot, the Giants will approach them, because they're at 5, 6, 7 are teams that are expected to be in the quarterback market. Dolphins would like to add a quarterback. The Chargers would like to add a quarterback. The Panthers would like to add a quarterback. And everybody knows what a talent Tua is. So that's not the issue, as Stefania said. The issue is, how is he going to hold up? Are you willing to trade up and gamble on a quarterback that, if you were healthy, might just be the number one overall pick in this draft? We don't know how that will play out. There's a lot still here left to unfold.
If I'm looking at taking Tua in the first round, I know medical history says one thing. April 9th is his date. I'm going to work him. I'm going to work him to the point where there will be no return. And I understand he's coming off an injury, and I understand all those sort of things. But if I'm serious about it, I want to see 5-step, 7-step drop. I want to see roll out to the left. I want to see half roll. I want to see throwback. I want to see him pull the ball down. I want to see him run. I want to see him cut. I want to see so much to a point where Rick will be there and he'll think I'm crazy, because I want to put him in a position where he's so sore at the next day, next time I do it individually, I'll know what it is.
Right, the problem is with the timeline, though, Rick. No, because he may not be ready for that. I mean,
well, if he's not ready for that,
there's your answer, I guess.
Then there's my answer, because I need to see a quarterback. I need to see the ball come off his hands. I need to see it live. Watching game film, and you know, you drafted Deshaun Watson. You were in the stadium watching him live, opposed to game film or even seeing him in private workouts.
Well, this is all a part of the evaluation process that all of these clubs are going. All those clubs that you mentioned that are in need of a quarterback, they're going through all of these conversations, because what you have to do, number one, it's great news that the CAT scans show that there's healing in the bone. There's great news that the MRIs, as Stefania mentioned, these are studies that are measuring the different ways that his hip is healing. So long as you see progression in that healing process, and you don't allow guys like Keyshawn to work the guy out where
he takes a setback. Hey, man,
if you control that environment, then you're going to be okay. You will at least be able to project that this guy's rehab process will be successful, because it's successful so far. Now, what that means is, how do I value that? When do I go? How far up do I go to get the guy? Because, you know, there's still some indecision there. And that's the conversation. That's what these guys
are. And that'll probably be there till draft night, too. Because everyone's waiting to see whether Washington is going to go take Tua, which, again, I think would be a surprise, or whether then Detroit is on the clock.
If I'm taking him high, though, Rick, how long do I wait to get him on the field? Obviously, it's a redshirt year, probably.
Pretty much.
But so are we looking his third year? Are we using a Aaron Rodgers-type model, a Dante Culpepper-type model, where he sits and wait?
Well, I think that's dependent upon which team takes him and what you're looking for, right? And it may or may not be a redshirt year, because if his rehab process goes and he's let's just say he's cleared. Now, we don't know, even by the medical recheck, there's one more opportunity for the clubs after they get through all of these studies that they're doing to see him, to put their hands on him again. Then he's got to work out. Then you can bring him into your facility. There's 30 visits that each club that they're interested in, they'll have another opportunity for their medical folks to put their hands on him again. And so depending upon the situation, you may say, okay, by training camp, he's fully cleared. He will have missed the off-season work, of course, but he can get all those mental reps. And maybe if he's full cleared at training camp, maybe he doesn't lose the first year.
All right, we'll continue again. The next milestone, so to speak, will be April 9th when he holds his own pro day. All right, now, all of New England continues to hold its collective breath, and that's because with the new league year set to begin next week, there are still questions regarding the future of Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. Largely considered the first domino to fall, there are a multitude of theories regarding where the future Hall of Famer will ultimately finish his career. We go to Mike Reese in Foxborough as Patriots Nation, like the rest of us, waits the future of Tom Brady. Mike, let's start with this. What is the atmosphere around this team right now?
Well, Wendy, I can sum it up in three words. Air of uncertainty. Here we are, 6 days away from when Tom Brady's agents can speak to other teams about contracts, and the Patriots and Brady are no closer to an agreement. So it's created this air of uncertainty throughout the building. And, you know, you think about it from Robert Kraft's perspective, the owner. He's giving Bill Belichick the keys to drive this situation, but he's also on the record, Kraft is, as saying that he hopes and prays that Brady either plays for the Patriots or he retires. And there's two key questions, Wendy, that remain. How far will Bill Belichick go financially, annually, and emotionally to try to keep Tom Brady here? And the second question, how much does Tom Brady still want to be with the Patriots? They're still working through the answers to those questions.
You're right, Mike. It seems the only thing we know for sure is that he will play. He's opting not to retire. At least that's what the understanding is right now. What are Patriots players saying about their quarterback? And I know they still think of him as their quarterback and his situation.
Well, Wendy, I think this story would sum it up. I was speaking with receiver Philip Dorsett the other day, and I said, have you been following Tom Brady's free agent status? And his answer to me was, well, how can you not? Every time I turn on the TV, that's all anyone is talking about. And Dorsett said, look, it's going to be hard to envision Tom in any other uniform, but at the same time, he's going to look out for his best interests. And then you talk to other free agents in Philip Dorsett's situation, like Kyle Van Noy and Ted Karras, and they say, we sort of feel like maybe we're on hold a little bit because we know the Patriots are dealing with Tom Brady first and foremost.
That makes a lot of sense, Mike. Thank you. And whether Tom Brady is plan A for Bill Belichick or not, there is always a plan B. What could that look like?
Well, I don't think that they're dealing with Tom Brady first. I think what they're dealing with first right now is the CBA first, and to try to get clarity there to know the rules that they're operating under so they then can go sit down and talk with Tom Brady and figure out a contract if both sides are interested or not, and sit down and talk to Philip Dorsett and the rest of the free agents and figure out what they're doing. So that's the first thing that they have to get done, is know the rules that they're playing under. Beyond that, their plan, if they lose Tom Brady, I don't know that they have one right now, to be perfectly frank, because I still think people are having a hard time processing the idea that Tom could potentially leave New England. It's not a certainty he will. It's certainly possible at this point in time. Maybe he stays. If he does leave, my sense would be that the Patriots then would convene and figure out what they want to do. And I think we've seen New England, if we judge by history in their past, they don't proactively react to these things and are forced into decisions that are rushed and desperate. They don't do that. So if Tom Brady were to leave, my sense is they sit down, they'd see which free agent quarterbacks are out there at that point in time, and then they take their time, and there'd be one sitting there at the end, being that this is the first year that there's ever been a greater supply of quarterbacks than a demand for quarterbacks. Somebody's going to be left without a chair, somebody may draw New England's interest. And they've got Jared Stidham on the roster, a rookie they like from last year. I bet they drafted another one this year. I bet they signed a free agent that didn't get the deal he's looking for. And there's your three guys, none of which cost a lot of money. And then they could take a look at it and figure out what they want to do from there.
They certainly have a plan B. We just don't know what it is. Bill Belichick is not going to go into a season free agency, the draft, without having a plan B. Much like Adam's saying, it's a bunch. It's, do we trade for an Andy Dalton? Do we take a look at Teddy Bridgewater if he's still on the board once Tom makes a decision? Do we look at Jameis Winston? There's so many different things and variables there. I think what has to happen, though, is they first have to have a real conversation, whether it's in Foxborough or whether it's at Tom's home, sit down, figure out where they want to go, what type of players they want to surround him with to get him comfortable in the situation again. But in the end, I still believe that he's going back to New England, because New England is not asking him to leave, much like Indianapolis did with Peyton Manning or some of these other quarterbacks, Brett Favre.
That was a different situation.
Situations as a whole.
Peyton in Indianapolis. But, Rick, let me ask you this. If you're a GM, in terms of the Patriots, I mean, there's a lot of intangibles. This is certainly the greatest player in that franchise's history, likely, of all time. I mean, you have to manage all kind of things if you consider his departure imminent. How do you do that?
Well, I think you do it very much like they're talking about. I do believe that there's a plan. We don't know what that plan is. I do think that even as a part of this process, before it's all decided, I think that there will be those conversations where Bill and Tom will sit down and they will talk about, even I think it goes even as far as past next week when Tom has his opportunity to talk to other teams, to see what his market value looks like, to see what those other opportunities look like. I think when those crystallize and all of a sudden this is a real life opportunity. And so now Tom really has to sit with this decision of, do I leave a place that I've been in and the comfortable place that I am for 20 years to go for this unknown? And then New England gets to say, okay, well, here's what we can do in order to keep you. I think those conversations are going to happen as well.
A lot going on. Talk about it. Next week is going to be a zoo.
How many phones you got, Adam?
I know. He's going to need about 10 more.
Something different.
Yeah, okay.
A couple batteries.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
The Dallas Cowboys and quarterback Dak Prescott have been working on a new deal for some time, and a new offer recently landed in Prescott's camp. The Cowboys prepared to make their quarterback among the highest paid players in NFL history, which is apparently what it will take in order to reach a longer term agreement. Here's our Ed Werder with more.
Speaking to Cowboys sources here today, the first thing is that those involved in negotiations with players approaching free agency, and I'm told they're active with six or more players right now, is that the deadline extension is logical. The Cowboys feel they'll have be far more restricted in terms of what they can pay Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, and others without a collective bargaining agreement. The first priority for Jerry Jones and son Steven is to avoid having to use the franchise and transition tags at all. They want a long-term contract with Prescott and recognize that's going to make him the highest paid player in franchise history. If they fail to reach an agreement with him, then they will use the franchise player tag, costing either $27 or $33 million against the cap. One thing the Cowboys and Prescott have in common, both want Cooper to remain in Dallas, which is something Cooper has described as being his preference as well. If the new CBA is ratified, they'll have to get a deal completed with either Prescott or Cooper to make that a reality. And from what I'm being told, it seems the Cowboys are working hard to reach an agreement with Cooper, and that Cooper and his agent appear motivated at the moment to get something done. That seemed to indicate to me he could be signed before Prescott.
Well, Ed, thank you. Recently, the Cowboys have been able to lock up a couple of their young superstars in 2019. They were able to sign DeMarcus Lawrence, Zeke Elliott, Jalen Smith, and Lyle Collins, all to deals that are at least 5+ years. Now they just have to sign their quarterback, which is not just any old thing on the to-do list. And Rick, as a former NFL GM, you certainly know that. But now with the franchise tag deadline and the other deadlines coming up, free agency starting, what are the conversations and what's going on in the office of Steven and Jerry Jones?
Well, I know we live in a world where we want the answer now, right? But these negotiations, they take time, and they don't operate in a vacuum. And so, I know that there's talk about, why is this taking so long to get Dak done? Well, I think when Steven and Jerry Jones, when they look at the roster and they talk about building and moving forward, they've got numbers that are allocated for certain positions for certain players. When you don't make those contracts come in at the value that you've originally thought about, now they've got to think about, okay, well, we had targeted this amount of money for these free agents, or we've targeted this amount of money for that position. And so you've got to move money around. You've got to figure out, how much can I actually give Dak? What position am I willing to sacrifice in free agency that we may not now get, or maybe we've got to go to a second tier player? So it's not just Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper. It's how do we come out of the season? How do we evaluate our roster, and what needs do we think that we prioritize, that we need to make sure that we address these issues before next season starts? And can we get all that done with the excess amount that we have to pay these two players?
Says Ed said that he thinks Amari Cooper could resign before Dak Prescott. Amari Cooper will resign before Dak Prescott. That'll happen. I expect that to be the case. And they will have to use their franchise tag on Dak Prescott, because these sides have been talking for months now and have been unable to come up with an agreement. The Cowboys made another offer March 2nd. Again, I think the next real critical spot here is the first week of March, when the Cowboys begin their offseason program. that becomes an artificial deadline, and that's why I think Amari Cooper.
Once you get Amari Cooper done, the quarterback is to follow, because you're not going to sign your wide receiver and not try to get the quarterback done. It makes no sense, especially what you gave up to get Amari Cooper to help the quarterback, especially on third down.
Dak Prescott's certainly a part of their plan. The Pro Football Hall of Fame, by the way, announced today the Cowboys and Steelers will play each other in the Hall of Fame game Thursday, August 6th. Now, we surveyed our NFL player analysts to make educated guesses. That's what we're calling them, educated guesses, on where eight veteran quarterbacks will play next season. It includes seven unrestricted free agents, headlined, of course, by Tom Brady, plus Andy Dalton, who appears headed out of Cincinnati with the Bengals likely drafting LSU's Joe Burrow with that top pick. And for starters, every single one of our analysts expect Dak Prescott to stay in Dallas. The question, whether it's on a franchise tag or a long-term deal, the rest of our survey results will be revealed as we move through the show. Thank you, Trey. We'll look later on about who will likely play under center for the Titans in 2020. Ryan Tannehill, Tom Brady, someone else. As we surveyed our NFL player analysts to make educated guesses again on where eight of these veteran quarterbacks will end up next season. Time for more survey results. And aside from Dak Prescott staying in Dallas, the consensus picks have Marcus Mariota leaving the Titans for the Bears and Teddy Bridgewater headed to Tampa Bay. So we'll start there with Bridgewater, the former Vikings first round pick. He went 5-0. Undefeated in place of Drew Brees as a starter last year in New Orleans, kept that team on track. And Adam, agree or disagree with a potentially a Bucs landing spot for Bridgewater?
Yeah.
Listen, that's a plausible spot for him. We'll see whether it works out or not. I think Tampa Bay is going to be in the market. You take a look at the vote here from the analysts here at ESPN, and four had him for the Buccaneers and three for the Chargers and three for the Raiders as fits. I mean, it all makes sense to me. To a certain extent, the Buccaneers are as logical as any, right? It seems like at this point in time, they are in the market to go add a quarterback. And Teddy Bridgewater is a guy who's immensely respected, would be popular in the locker room. I think Bruce Arians knows what he would bring to that offense. So, again, it's a logical scenario, but there are so many quarterback dominoes. I don't know that I could agree with
any exactly one of them. It. Not one has fallen yet.
Well, and I would say this. If in fact, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Bruce Arians, they're willing and ready to walk away from Jameis Winston, probably that decision is primarily based on the turnovers, right? He's thrown a lot of interceptions. And so Teddy Bridgewater does protect the football. He won football games. I think he was close to 68% completion percentage, nine touchdowns and only two interceptions. So that might be the lure for them to move away from Jameis and maybe to Teddy.
When I look at that, yeah, Buccaneers, I was one of the guys who voted. But I had him going to the Chargers because I feel like that's just a better fit for what the Chargers want to do. Bruce Arians likes to push the football down the field. And one of the criticisms that we seem to get with Teddy Bridgewater is he doesn't push the ball down the field vertically. He protects it. There's no question about it. Are they going to be willing to pay him the type of money it's going to take to get him? He's going to be a 90-plus million-dollar quarterback.
Teddy Bridgewater?
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on options are available.
I think there's a lot of options available, right? I mean, you got to think the Chargers – who knows what John Gruden might do?
I don't think the Chargers will be in on him.
See, I think the Chargers will be in on him.
Let me ask you about it's a different scenario for Marcus Mariota for different reasons. You know, never quite solidified the way Tennessee hoped it would. So, listen, there were a number of different landing spots, seven, I believe. The Bears led the way, but I think the vote sort of shows that with Marcus, you just don't, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Rick. Like, somebody's going to have to decide there's something there that's been untapped, I think.
They are, and again, it's very speculative, right? So, I mean, I would imagine why there's some reasons why you say that the Bears is a good landing spot for them. I think all of these positions, I mean, it's just going to be the idea of what are we going to ask this guy to do versus the skill set that he brings to the table versus what we're going to ask him to do. And Mariota certainly has a skill set that can do a lot of different things, especially with off-schedule plays and those kind of things, not as accurate down the field and, those, you know, pushing the ball downfield. It's going to be a function of the offense.
And here's another one for the Chargers for me and Marcus Mariota, because roots to the West Coast, Pac-12, they're moving into a new city, a new stadium, and it just seems right, the right fit. He's not a completely done quarterback yet. This is only leaving his fifth year in the league, entering his sixth year, so he's still relatively young. Okay, and he has a lot of upside, and I think that you can work with him. I just do, and they need some sort of splash out west in that new stadium. They need to bring something there, a name of sorts.
So how many quarterbacks are you sending to the Chargers?
Well, it doesn't mean that they're both going, though. Doesn't mean that they're both going. So, that's why we're all guessing, right?
The edge. What do we call it? Educated guessing. Well, we also continue to follow the CBA process, and the NFLPA player representatives on Monday voted down a resolution that would have allowed players who've already voted on the proposed CBA to change their votes. According to our Dan Graziano, enough players had asked whether they could change that the NFLPA player gets decided to propose the resolution earlier Monday. The NFLPA announced it was extending the deadline for players to cast their votes from midnight Thursday or near midnight to near midnight on Saturday. To further this story, we say hello to our Dolphins reporter, Cameron Wolf. He is at the NFLPA annual meetings in Florida. And Cameron, the big item on the docket for today is the election of a new NFLPA president. Where do we stand?
Yeah, Wendy, within the last hour, the Browns center, J.C. Treader, was elected by the Board of Representatives as this new president. And what the big thing to know about this is that with a new CBA coming up, a lot of people were drawing their line in the sand one way or the other. People like Russell Okung and Michael Thomas were very strong on the no vote. Sam Acho was strong on the yes vote. And Treader, he presented a moderate account. There were players who felt comfortable with him as the president, whether the CBA passed or not. Treader is a industrial labor relations degree from Cornell. So he felt really comfortable and intelligent in these settings. He was able to inform and educate players about this new CBA. He provided drawbacks and strengths about this new CBA. And I talked to one player who said he voted for Treader, even though he didn't know which way Treader actually stood on the CBA. It was about educating and informing, and they believe that Treader will lead them through unity with the owners in this new process. So they got the president done. They've got the treasurer done. They're currently in meetings to figure out the executive committee. And then all attention goes to the CBA itself. Voting ends on Saturday at 11:59 p.m., and it's still up in the air. One player said meetings are still contentious this week. I had another player tell me he was undecided, and how the meetings went this week would decide which way he would vote. Another prominent player told me he was voting no, but the main reason why is he thought the 10-year CBA would have middle school people inside the CBA that they're currently negotiating. So it puts a lot of pressure on their weight. So there's a lot of still to be discussed between now and Saturday. Players are on both sides of the debate. And once we see whatever the CBA comes down, I think that'll have a huge standing on how the NFLPA and its players move forward.
Cameron, thank you. All of this, of course, in various ways affecting negotiations, not the least of which is the extension of the franchise tag deadline. That was Thursday. Now it's Monday. What does this mean in terms of negotiations, Adam?
Well, everything is contingent upon the CBA right now. Everybody is waiting for Saturday night, midnight, because, frankly, NFL business is backed up because of this. There have been some moves made in the NFL. It's not like teams are not making moves. But there are a lot more moves waiting to happen based on the rules that teams will be operating under this year, which they don't know whether or not they will have two tags or one tag. Here are the primary candidates for franchise tags this year. They move back the franchise tag deadline till Monday, 11:59. I would be surprised if any of these players did not get the franchise tag. I think all are expected at this point in time to get the franchise tagging. You'll notice there that there's a lot of pass rushers on that list. Teams are not in the habit of letting good pass rushers get to the market. And so most of them will be tagged this year.
And they all expect to be tagged. I'm sure they've been talking to their representatives about what's coming, what to expect. And it's all about getting to the money. And in order to get to the money, you got to negotiate in good faith. And I think some of these teams will do that.
Well, and I go back to the report. It's encouraging for me because I think leadership is of paramount importance when you're talking about a labor agreement and a deal. And so to the degree that J.C. Treader's presidency now is at least in one case of those players, able for him to understand the process a little bit more, able for him to understand what exactly are the nuances of the agreement and why do I feel good about this agreement, or at least what am I the things that I'm opposed to, so that we can address those. And hopefully we can get to a point where the CBA is agreed upon and we can move on.
And it's a huge issue. Like, that is a huge issue.
Talk about a 10-year labor agreement.
Right, because if it passes, then there's labor peace for 10 years through the 2030 season.
Critically
which
important.
Gives the NFL almost 50 years of labor peace. And if it doesn't get approved, then There's uncertainty for everybody at that point in time. And as it was explained, a vote no on the CBA is a vote yes for a work stoppage. We'll see how that plays out in the coming days, what the players want, whether they want the CBA or they don't want the CBA. That's up to them.
It's important to understand it, though. You can't go in there and just check the box.
I completely agree. But as an executive who lived through 2011 and the uncertainty of a labor agreement or not and work stoppages and those kind of things, I sure hope for all of our sakes that they can work this out.
Again, the deadline for players to vote now Saturday. Robbie Anderson, soon to be free agent wide receiver, is with us. We're glad to have you. Just happened to be in Bristol. I mean, you know, it happens. Listen, let me ask you this. Is this an exciting time? Is it a stressful time? Is it a curious time? How would you characterize where you are right now?
It's a little bit of everything, I would say. Curious, you know, a little nervous and exciting because it's a new chapter, but kind of don't know what to expect, what to think, so.
What you nervous about, though?
Just making sure I make the best decision.
Yeah.
And also feeling like I get what I know I worked for, you know?
Yeah, you worked hard for it.
When you think about making that decision and you don't know where and you don't know the specifics, but do you have sort of a checklist, like things that really matter to you that will help you decide? Because they're obviously going to be
serious. What you mean? Getting paid.
Well, getting paid, clearly. But what else matters to you, Robbie?
I want to be in an environment. I want to win, more importantly, more than, you know, obviously the money, that's everything. That's the name. It's the business. But I want to go so I'm going to win, and I'm going to get to be the player I can be, you know, contribute, make plays consistently, you know, and be accepted by my, you know, hopefully it is the Jets, but, you know, by my new teammates that I'm in a winning culture around people that can make me a better person, a better player.
What do the Jets need to do to get you back signed up with them?
Call my agent. See,
if I was the Jets right now, I tell you, I don't even need to know numbers or nothing. Just seeing you play and judging against other guys like Shepard with the Giants and where his numbers are, I probably would offer you something in the $12 million a year range, give myself a little wiggle room, maybe the 13, somewhere in there, because you are right now, as far as the receivers go for the Jets, you're the only guy.
Right.
Now, they can go draft a guy to pair with you, but they shouldn't allow you to hit the free agent market because I'm sure the New England Patriots or somebody like that would love to have you.
Yep. Robbie, let me ask you this. You said you want to win and you wanted to go to a place that would allow you to win. So what is that? Is it the quarterback? Is it the coach? What in your mind allows you to be a successful team and win?
I think that starts. It starts from top to bottom. You know.
Who's that? The coach?
No, from the upstairs.
All the way up top.
Yeah, everybody in the whole building has to be on the same page. You know, when you look at teams that consistently win or consistently in the hunt, you know, everybody in the whole building is on the same page.
Quarterback is not of importance.
No, that's obviously. I'm saying that's everything is important, but. What, top to bottom.
What about geographic? What like, you know, region? Do you want to go west, stay east? You don't really care?
Not really 100% sure on that. Obviously, I want to be somewhere that I enjoy outside of football. So, but, you know, there's some great teams in the middle of the country, you know, like Green Bay.
He's not real. You know what? Here's the thing. He's not about to X anybody out right now.
No, let me tell you right now, just based on his outfit and his look, that's a West Coast or East Coast for me.
It doesn't scream Middle America.
No, it doesn't.
Fashion. Things have happened.
No, and
you're into fashion.
That's
a thing for you. Tell me about that. When did you become interested in fashion?
I was always into, you know, my clothes and things like that.
Even as a little type?
Yeah, probably more so then because I probably couldn't have certain things, you know,
okay.
So I wanted certain things. But, you know, I always pride myself in my appearance and,
I like that look. That's a very studious look, right? Well, not that one. That's a different look.
What is that? Randy, you better watch it.
I like that. That's a fashion.
No, that's just
it.
You strike, though. You know, that's the culture. That's where he's at. That's
your mom's nodding her head, by the way, that you have been particular about this for a long time. So, yeah. Listen, I'm not knocking Kansas. They got great fashion.
I was wondering if I could do the locks, though.
Yeah,
you think I can rock that?
Man, easy.
No, my kids are laughing.
Exactly. Then you got no ground to stand on. Let me ask you about Matt Rhule, because you played for him at Temple, and obviously he becomes a head coach in this league with the Carolina Panthers. You like that hire? What will he bring to Carolina? Will he bring Robbie Anderson to Carolina? That might be a better question.
I mean, who knows, you know, but I could really see him in, you know, within the next 5 years. I really see him, you know, probably winning the Super Bowl. Knowing his mindset, knowing the culture that he creates and the environment he creates for players, you know, he makes it easy for you to be a player. You just go out there and do your job. He accepts people for who they are, you know, but he's a winner. You know, that's just in his bloodline. You see what he's done in the past with programs, and I know he can do that in the NFL.
They need a receiver down in Carolina. You want to go play with Cam?
I wouldn't mind to. I love Cam. That's my big dog right there.
Okay. Right there. See, Cam, I don't know. I mean, you got an agent, but Key, he
no, no, I'm
that.
Just, I'm you just know, asking got- him. That's all. It's all good.
It's all right. Robbie, let me ask you this. If you're pitching yourself and you're going into these teams and you're saying, hey, I'm here, you know what I can do on the field, mm-hmm. Here's what else I am. What else are you?
I mean, you know, I'm a hard worker. You know, I'm not going to say things just to say things, you know, but when I say things, it's heartfelt. I mean it, you know, and I lead by my actions more than anything, you know, and I'm a team player, you know. Obviously, if we lose a game and I know I didn't contribute, I'm going to be frustrated, but if we win the game and I didn't contribute, I'm not going to be mad because that's the ultimate goal, you know. But I'm just looking to win, you know, work hard and, you know, be a great player.
Do you expect to hear from the Jets at all?
I mean, I would hope so. I expect to. You know, I think they definitely want me back. You know, all in all, I truly do want to be back with the Jets. You know, I love Sam. You know, I love my teammates, Jamal, you know, all those guys. And, you know, I feel like it's unfinished business there that I've been trying to get done since I got there. So, you know, I would hope to finish out the mission all in all, but –
And you do understand the NFL is a business.
Yeah, it's a business, so I understand that aspect of it, and that's just the reality of it, but, you know.
I like that unfinished business, though. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a little something to be said for that, Key.
Yeah, see, me, I had to.
I know about you. I know about you, but you're different. Robbie, nice to have you with us. We'll be watching for sure.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Ravens offensive lineman Marshall Yanda has decided to retire after 13 seasons. He played his entire career in Baltimore, joining Larry Allen and Alan Faneca as the only guards in NFL history to make at least 8 Pro Bowls as a guard and then also win a Super Bowl. If, in fact, Tom Brady moves on after his 20-year career, Key, he'll be with a new offense. With receivers not named Julian Edelman, it will be a transition just in terms of the X's and O's. What will that be like for the quarterback?
I think it'll be a little bit difficult to begin with. I think when you think about some quarterbacks that have moved on, Joe Montana went from San Francisco to Kansas City, but Paul Hackett, his quarterback coach, became the offensive coordinator. You think about Brett Favre leaving Green Bay to the Jets, then to the Minnesota Vikings, both West Coast systems. I mean, when you start to think about these sort of things, Peyton Manning leaving Indy to go to Denver, but basically implementing his style, what he wanted in that offense in Denver, can Tom Brady do that with the team of his choice?
Adam, do you think that would be a priority for Tom to be able to maintain familiarity in terms of the offensive scheme?
No, I think what he's going to be looking for is finding a place that he's comfortable with the coaching staff, the organization, that he feels like he'll be able to work on the same page. It'd be a collaborative effort between him and the organization. Collaboration, I think that is a key word. I think that maybe he's going to be able to capture that in New England, and maybe not. Maybe he looks elsewhere. And I think also when you have somebody like Tom Brady, you're looking at this not only for yourself, but you're looking at this for your family. It's a family decision. It's not just an individual decision. He's not a free agent like Robbie Anderson who can go pick the team he wants and I'll go move to wherever it is. He has other people to consider in this decision, and I believe he will.
You know, it was an I can't believe it's been 8 years, Rick. Wow, time flies. But it wasn't that long ago that you went through this with Peyton Manning. I referenced the Jets and the motorcades and all that because he did sort of do a crisscross tour of the potential suitors. And your team at that time was among those vying for the services of Peyton Manning. How is it different then than it will be now for Tom?
Well, very similar in the sense that the caliber of quarterback that we're talking about at the point in his career where Adam mentions is not just about football. It's about his family. It's about a number of different things. It's about his legacy. And so you're right. We courted Peyton, and we were looking to add him to the organization. The big difference in this situation, though, there are two things, I think. Number one, Peyton was injured. Number two, the Colts were saying goodbye to Peyton. They were cutting Peyton. So it was he was coming from a different perspective. He was at a different point in his career. And so there were more things to analyze, more things to consider than a healthy Tom Brady. You know, obviously at the end of the day, we couldn't grab a consensus in our building to actually go after him. And so we didn't. But you know, there's a bunch of teams right now having those conversations about going after Tom Brady.
And I'm sure they are, because there's young quarterbacks that certain people in the building want to try to get up to speed. Tom Brady basically would be a stopper for them not being able to be there and get these young quarterbacks going. So you got to think about those sort of things when you're Tom Brady and organizations, much like Rick is saying. Everybody has to be on the same page. You're going to have offensive coordinators saying, no, I don't want to coach a veteran like this. And you're going to have head coaches saying, well, he's going to keep our job for us.
Right, right. And therein is a solid argument as well. Let's go back to our ESPN player analyst survey again as we sort of look across the board at some of these quarterbacks and where they may end up. We've already established Dak Prescott staying in Dallas, Teddy Bridgewater perhaps to the Bucs, Mariota, a number of teams, but the Bears chief among them. And time now for more as we look at Phillip Rivers headed to the Colts and Jameis Winston staying right where he is, also with the Bucs. But let me ask you, Adam, is that a relatively done deal, Phillip Rivers in Indianapolis?
Absolutely not. And to say that you're going to slot a quarterback to a certain city, again, this is a vote. So this is just speculative, right? And you take a look at the votes. Those are the people that think Phillip Rivers is going to the Colts because it's been out there. And guess what? I would think that the Colts would have some level of interest, but I don't believe that that is their only quarterback option. I believe that there are others that they're exploring. And to think that Phillip Rivers is going to be an Indianapolis Colt or Jameis Winston is going to be a Buck, this is just a fun little speculative exercise that the analysts filled out. That's
well,
all.
I'm I bet one of those analysts.
He knows.
The only reason why I say Phillip Rivers to the Colts is because of the relationship with Frank Reich. That's the only reason why I say that. And they may need a quarterback to get them over the hump. And then Jameis Winston, you give him a small deal, a prove-it deal, you teach him. Because if Bruce Arians is supposed to be this quarterback fixer that everybody says, fix it. Fix those 30 interceptions. Turn around.
At what point, though, you know, with Jameis, Rick, is this, you know, you are what you say you are kind of? I mean, at some point it is what it is.
Well, and no question, absolutely. Your numbers are what you are, but I don't necessarily disagree with what Keyshawn is saying. You got a tremendous talent in Jameis Winston, and there's a reason why this guy is making the decisions that he makes or the mistakes that he makes when he turns the football over. How can we harness the talent that we have here, reduce those mistakes, and maybe you've got yourself a quarterback?
Because he's thrown 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
30 for 30, right there.
You're allowing him to push the ball down the field because you believe he can do it. Now, just hone him in, fix it. That's why Byron Leftwich is there, an ex-quarterback, to teach him. But you give up on him after 1 year. You don't have to pay him $30 million. I'm sure you could go to him on a two-year deal, Rick, and say, hey, prove it deal.
Prove it.
We'll give you 2 years. We'll give you $20 million a year. We need you to prove it.
Listen, all of this is why next week and the next week and a half or so will just be phenomenally interesting if you follow football, because to your point, we can't know any of this until one of those dominoes falls, and it's yet to happen.
We know more than you, Adam.
So
good. Then you can have my job next week.
Yeah, right? And the 49,000 hours that come with it. Back in the 2017 NFL draft, it was the Texans, not the Rangers, who traded not one but two first-round picks from 2017 and one from 2018 to the Browns for the number 12 overall pick. The reason they went up and got Deshaun Watson, he's already made two playoff appearances in 3 years. And the man behind that, the architect of that decision, the then GM, Rick,
That was easy if you were smart.
Well, he is.
If you were smart, that was easy.
Well, you know what? Better to be lucky than good. In this case, I think you were both. Rick, take us in the room, the war room, if you will, and walk us through what happened.
Well, it was a bit of an anomaly in the sense that I would tell you 85 to 90% of the draft picks that we selected as I managed drafts were a consensus, right? Mm-hmm. So by the time we got to the draft, our board was set and valued where everyone agreed with the decision of where we would take a player. I walked away from the national championship game knowing two things about this guy, that A, he could be a great quarterback for us, and B, we wouldn't be able to get him in the mid-20s where we were. And so the day of the draft, I kind of worked to try to get up. I thought he was actually going to go in the top 10. And so I spent the day trying to maneuver that move, but I couldn't get it done. The cost was too prohibitive. And so what I did at the end of the day before I went down to the war room, is Sashi Brown and I had negotiated earlier in the year the trade for Brock Osweiler, so I had a good relationship with him. I picked up the phone and I called him. He was sitting at 12, and I said, listen, if my guy is there at 12, I'm going to want to come and get him, and so I'll give you next year's one. I had done the math. It was an easy trade. He said, okay, so I'll let you know. So we get down, and the draft starts to happen, and I just, for the sake of conversation, decided to poll the room around those picks that I was trying to move up to. And I couldn't get anybody to agree that they would move. And so it was just interesting. And so now all of a sudden, here comes Kansas City, right? And they go get Patrick Mahomes.
When they trade up to 10, do you panic that you just lost your guy?
Well, they traded up to 7, and I did panic. I did. I didn't know who. I thought that they were coming to get him. And obviously when they took Patrick, I said to the room, man, I'm telling you, if there were no ladies in the room at the time, Amy Palsik wasn't there.
Okay, no
worries. I said, if you want a guy and you know that you got that this guy can be your guy, you have to go get him. And so, so I pulled the room again, and nobody wants to get him. I leaned over to Coach O'Brien, and I said, listen, I've got a deal at 12, and if he's there, I'm going to take him. And so Bill and I talked about it, and Bill supported it. He said, hey, if you feel that strongly about it, then I'll coach him up. So we get to the pick, and when we got to 12, I was just so happy he was there. I just stood up, and I said, man, sometimes you got to go with your gut, okay? And we took him, and the young man is a phenomenal player.
But you had an opportunity to see him play live at the national championship game amongst other games, so you knew exactly what you were getting.
Well, I knew exactly what I was getting, and those 30 visits where you can bring guys in, the meetings at the combine, I sat down, and I said to him when we brought him onto campus, I said, listen, there's no way that I'm going to be able to sit where I am and get you. If we move up to get you, let me be clear that you know what I'm expecting. Let me hear from you what your expectations are as a player. So we had that dialogue, and yes, it was a function of all of the games that I had seen live. It was the entire scouting process. But there's something about Deshaun that the really good quarterbacks have, and that's this ability to make everybody around them better. So everybody's play elevates when you have those kind of guys, and that's that it factor that he has that I watched him, when I watched him play with his teammates, how people respond and react to him.
In late games, especially with him.
Yeah.
When you're feeling out the other front offices and you make the decision where you identify that I can trade up to number 12, how concerned are you that Cleveland, which also needed a quarterback, is going to know that you're trading up that aggressively, that desperately to get to that spot, that they know you're taking a quarterback and that you've just basically advertise your intentions to a team that could use a player like Deshaun Watson themselves?
Well, I was nervous, but again, as these things, relationships, a lot of the trades that happen in the NFL, they're based on relationship, right? And so Sashi and I, as I mentioned, had done a lot of work together that offseason. And so he hesitated when I called him. And I said, hey, man, we've got this agreement. Now, you do the right thing here, and I'm coming to get this deal. So there's a concern. There's always a concern. And clearly they didn't have him rated that high, and so we did.
So you have to take something of a leap of faith at that point in time and trust that they're not going to take the guy that you want.
Not only that, Adam, when you're on the phone, okay, you're on the phone with the team that you're executing the trade with, and you've got a guy on the phone with the league office because there are mechanics that you have to go through when the trade occurs. Your team has to call the league. The other team has to call the league. The terms have to be consistent. And so if I've been on the phone with guys and they said, well, who are you taking? I will not tell them because I don't want them to mix the deal and take my guy.
Yeah, no question.
Was he the number one quarterback on your board the entire time in front of Mahomes, in front of Trubisky?
For me, he was the top quarterback, yes.
Wow. Well, it looks like things worked out all right, at least.
Well, they seem to be working out now.
Listen, that year there were three teams, I think, who traded up for quarterbacks in that draft. I mean, it was just
correct.
Busy, busy. I ask that because do you anticipate we'll see similar activity, Adam, in Las Vegas in April?
Well, if we go by the history of recent drafts, most teams that want quarterbacks go up to go get them. I mean, they don't sit around and wait usually. Now, last year, the Giants sat where they were, the Redskins sat where they were, and I think that was the first year in 5 or 6 years that teams let the quarterbacks come to them. So last year was a little bit of an aberration, but other years, teams identify the quarterbacks, and if you look at the board this year in the top 10 picks, you'd see the makings of potential deals there with teams at 3 and 4 not necessarily needing or wanting quarterbacks, and teams at 6, 7, and 8, or 5, 6, 7 in the quarterback market, potentially.
Rick, let me ask you this. What kind of adrenaline rush quickly do you get when you make a move and you get the guy that you believe is the right fit?
Well, for me, the rush happens a little bit after, right? Because there's so many things that you've got to do. You've got to execute the trade in this case. You've got to get the guy on the phone. You've got to congratulate him. You've got to do all those things. And so once it's all said and done and the pick's in, then the adrenaline is there. There's a little bit of a relief. And then you're excited at that point because you think what you've done is you've solved the franchise quarterback problem.
Sure. All right. Well, great story.
Fascinating stuff.
The draft, of course, here on ESPN from Las Vegas. We go back to our, what'd you call it, Adam, a fun exercise, fun little exercise, our ESPN player analyst survey for where these guys might end up. And the final three, Tom Brady to the Patriots, a close vote there. Our analysts resoundingly keep Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. And because there were eight different teams picked for Andy Dalton, well, we'll just put him somewhere. So the bottom line is we don't know. But listen, you know, Key, you have been steadfast, I would say this, in your belief, and we don't know and he doesn't know, that Tom Brady ultimately lands back in New England.
I just feel like he's going to wind up back there. But right now he wants to take the opportunity with his family to go through the free agency process. And then at the end, Mr. Kraft and Bill Belichick will make all good. They'll give him what he deserves. They'll give him that Michael Jordan deal at the end. You know, the Michael Jordan, here you go. We're going to take care of you the way we're supposed to.
So we have basically 13 analysts. Six pick the Patriots. Four pick the Chargers. Two pick the Titans. And one picked the Buccaneers. So it's just interesting to think this is how other people survey the Tom Brady landscape, however real it is or isn't at this point in time. Notice, again, one Buccaneers vote. No Raiders votes. No 49ers votes.
I mean, it is interesting, and I would say this, too. I'm not sure, and maybe the destinations would be different, but had we done this a month ago, I'm not sure that in terms of 6-4-2, the votes, I still think, Rick, they would have been sort of all over the map, lending us to the sort of conclusion where we are is that Tom Brady doesn't know. You know, he knows he's intended to go through this process and see what it yields.
I completely agree, and then to the degree that those six or seven real options become really tangible things that he really has to consider versus what happens when the Patriots sit down with him and say, hey, this is what we need to do to keep you. You know, I have a hard time seeing him in another uniform, but the possibility is there, which means that the possibility is real.
Well, Ryan Tannehill was almost unanimous. Again, doesn't mean anything except that the consensus majority here, Key, is that he goes back and tries to finish the job in Tennessee.
I think so. He had when he took over for Mariota, he had a really good season. He led them to the AFC Championship. Although they didn't win, it just makes sense. Why would you move on from a guy who put you there because you think you're going to get better with Tom Brady? And what if you don't? What if you don't get better with Tom Brady, but you at least got to a point of AFC Championship and you can build on that?
Well, and not only that, he played his best football. Now, it wasn't in the playoffs, but during the regular season, and I think that's primarily because of the way that football team is built, right? They play good defense. They run the football. They're a physical team. His skill set fits that perfectly.
Well, and don't forget, Rick, and I know you would second this, and we'll talk about, well, you know what? We'll actually talk about Andy Dalton because good luck.
He's everywhere, huh?
Yeah, he's everywhere. And if you're everywhere, you know, who knows? But again, and I think Andy Dalton, Adam, you can probably second this, is one of those quarterbacks that, you know, we just have to wait and see because there's a lot of chips that have to fall into place prior to that.
I will say this about Andy Dalton. There are teams that really like Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
They think he's a good quarterback.
Well, if you're looking for a veteran quarterback that you know you can put on your roster, compete maybe and maybe not win the job, but you have a good backup that can ascend when you need him, that's what Andy Dalton's
like him.
Way to land this plane, Rick, on just your second day. The Jump is next. We'll see you soon.